This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. This is Baseball Outside the Box, the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. First of all, let me thank you. Got an email just the other day from somebody and checked it out on the web. We were rated the top five baseball podcasts around, and that is awesome. We are working hard, hopefully, to be number one in the educational part. So thank you to all our listeners, our loyal listeners. I know you guys had something to do with that because I had no idea. I got an email from one of our listeners, and that was really great news. So we are back from St. Louis, where I had the opportunity and was honored to speak at the National High School Coaches Baseball Convention. Talked about coaching creativity. It was a lot of fun. And during that time, you listened to the show prior to this. You knew that we did a show live from the St. Louis Hilton lobby, along with my good friends, Kevin Wilson of KWB Radio and Joe Ferraro of the 1% Better Podcast. Both have podcasts and outstanding guys. They also spoke at the convention. So we had a lot of fun there. A couple of announcements. One, we're heading to the Dominican Republic. Coming December 26th, we're taking our baseball team down there. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you're ever interested, contact me at petercaliendo@att.net. It is a great international cultural baseball experience. We're heading in the summer to Cuba, Italy, Japan, and some other countries. So if you're interested in being a coach or player, just get a hold of me. Would really appreciate it. I guarantee you will have a awesome time there. So also last announcement, and then we'll get ready to start with the show. If you're looking for a guest speaker, my dates are pretty booked, but you know, again, email me. Love to come out and talk to your coaches, players, or parents anytime, depending where at, whether in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. All right. Another exciting show. We have a guest recommended by my great friend, Mike Pinto, the manager of the World Series champion in the Frontier League, Southern Illinois Miners. Mike is a great friend, and he always recommends some great people to the show. So our guest today, he is what we call, or he calls himself, I've seen it on Twitter, the most countercultural skill developer you'll find on social media when it comes to pitching. And so this is going to be interesting because we're going to see some other aspects of the pitching side that may not match up with some of the things that are going on with the internet. So let me get to it. Let me introduce Dustin Pease. That is spelled P-E-A-S-E, and we'll put it on the show notes. We'll give you his Twitter and also his website. His background will be on there, but just to give you a little background, you know, he's played college baseball, coached in college, also played professionally, independent ball. He's been at all levels of the game playing, and the unique part about it, and he's got a book about it, and you'll be able to see that on the show notes. The unique part is that, you know, he was a pitcher that was only, and he'll tell you better than I can, you know, not very tall, not very big, you know, not your prototypical pitcher that supposedly everybody's looking for, but yet he played all the way up into spring training into AAA. So we're looking forward to talking to Dustin about a lot of different topics, and some of them will be very interesting because they will contradict some of the things that maybe what some other people and folks out there may know about pitching. So let's get started. Let me introduce our good friend, Dustin Pease. Dustin, how you doing, man? Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box.
Peter, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here. Looking forward to talking some baseball with you today.
All right, so let's do this. First of all, let's start off because I think it'll be great. Let's tell our audience in the U.S. and around the world a little bit about your background when it comes to your playing background. And I got a feeling just from reading some of your things, this is the part that motivated you into getting into working with pitchers. And you've worked at, you know, with pitchers. I looked on your website. You got major league pitchers there with a lot of great endorsements that talk great about you. Of course, Mike Pinto talks fantastic about you and what you've been doing. So, but I got a feeling you were motivated by what went on with you during your career. So let's start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. You know, I was a kid. I was pretty much an average kid growing up as far as like in terms of like size and build, maybe even below average is maybe what some people would say. I was pretty small, pretty puny. And, you know, the main thing, you know, I grew up in an environment with my family, my dad, with just the passion for the game of baseball. And I feel like as many coaches you'll talk to, you know, just that passion for the game, you know, the desire to be good and to maybe even play at the major league level is going to be there. You know, I got to go to a lot of Orioles games growing up with my dad. He took me down there a lot, you know. So, you know, building that, I think the initial thing for me, and as for any player, any coach, is just building that initial passion for the game. And although I was a small person and I kind of realized my physique, you know, I still wanted to play at that level. You know, once that dream is instilled, you know, once that goal is kind of planted, you know, you want to do everything you can to maybe make it to that level. So, you know, I as time went on, I kind of realized I was going to have to put a lot more work in. But for me on the pitching side, I mean, you know, I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that are much more physically gifted than me. You know, it's very apparent to see that. It still happened that, I mean, that pretty much happened all the way through my career. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a really good pitching coach growing up that could talk to me about the skill of pitching, you know, how to get people out consistently when you don't have high velocity. And it wasn't something that I could have been certain of, you know, given my physique. So, you know, I wanted to make sure I exhausted all my resources in terms of like how to get people out. So, you know, locating pitches, having that skill of command, and that was something I really focused a lot of my attention on growing up. And, you know, it happened to work out through my career. But, you know, it's tough. You know, it's tough growing up in that situation. And not to speak too bad about baseball, but, you know, I was on the steroid age. You know, a lot of these guys were just massive. And it was a little intimidating.
Yep.
With, you know, how am I going to combat this lifestyle? You know, how am I going to get myself to be at such a peak level of performance to be able to compete against this type of competition? So, you know, I kind of felt like I found a way to level the playing field, and I still made myself a value. And that's kind of where it led me to the path I went down as far as skill work.
All right, let's talk to our coaches and players specifically. You know, the coaches that have players who may be, you know, in your situation, but they don't throw hard. They're not very big early on. And also the players, you know, what's your recommendation to these guys, you know, as far as, you know, why should they continue? Because they keep hearing, you know, if you don't have velocity, you're not going to go higher to a higher level. What's your recommendation? What should these guys be doing, you know, to kind of counteract that and say, you know what, I can go to a higher level. Just because I don't throw hard doesn't mean I can't make it to the big leagues.
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, I think it's just one, it's going to take some very, very thick skin. It's going to take some very disciplined nature in how you practice. It's going to take a little bit of even delusion to do it that way, you know. And I kind of look back at my career and think, man, how did I get through it? How did I make my way through it, you know, the way that I did it? And, you know, some people, when they ask me this question, it's kind of like, you know, I defined who I was as a pitcher at a very young age. You know, I basically told people who I was. This is how I'm going to get people out. This is how I'm going to be successful. This is how I'm going to be very successful. And it's almost like that had to be accepted at a certain point. You know, when you can prove that you're exceptionally good the way that you create yourself as an athlete, if you can prove that you can consistently execute and consistently perform at a very high level, maybe not at the way that's preferred by the culture of the game, at some point, people are going to have to take notice, you know. So for me, it just happened to work out. I proved my ability. I was able to get that Division I scholarship. I was able to get that professional contract. I was able to sign with affiliated organizations. And when I made it to my respective levels, we didn't talk much about velocity then. You know, the question wasn't really, well, Dustin, you need to keep throwing harder then. It was more so just kind of keep doing what you're doing. You know, in terms of like just the average coach or player, yeah. I mean, I'm not ignorant to the fact that you're going to need to throw hard. You're going to have to probably throw at a higher speed to get more attention, and that's just the way the game is. Unfortunately, a lot of people, they will solely practice that in negation to like just trying to work on other aspects of the game and pitching and how to actually effectively use that measurable of speed and velocity. So it's not something I'm opposed to. You know, velocity is a very important part of pitching. It actually is something I spent, even though I was very skilled at command and locating pitches, I spent the majority of my career trying to add velocity through means of long toss and throwing and just constant amounts of throwing. And I worked out as well. I was always trying to improve in every way I can, but not at the expense of my skill. So again, I think that is hopefully some guys can kind of take that for what it's worth. It's tricky. It is. It's a tough decision to make in how you're going to train and how you're going to continue to work and make yourself better.
Well, Dustin, yeah, because you're going to have, and I'm sure you've heard it because I've heard it many times. You're going to have people saying, well, wait a second, baseball's, especially hitting is a reaction game. Now if I can, if I'm throwing 85 mm-hmm. and another guy's throwing 90, well, the reaction is going to be a lot different. So how do I make myself as good as that guy? If I don't increase velocity, or maybe, maybe you're at your maximum velocity, what do you do then?
Again, so that's a cool idea, throughout my career, when I started really understanding the effects of location, location actually changes the speed of how the timing works with a hitter. So I didn't know this. I didn't know the actual numbers coming up. I just knew that when you throw an inside fastball, the timing is different than an outside fastball. So let's say you take that 85 mile an hour pitcher and he understands that talking about Perry Husband's work, and he's the guy who kind of talked about, he's kind of defined effective velocity. If you throw an 85 mile an hour fastball inside on the inner half at the belt, you're looking at a 4 to 5 mile an hour increase in terms of reaction time and where they have to make contact with the ball. So you're looking at 89 to 90 miles an hour. If you throw it low and away, it's -5 to -6. So you're going, 79 miles an hour. So, if that 90 mile an hour pitcher doesn't, if that 90 mile an hour pitcher can't effectively move his ball around the strike zone, he's not really effectively changing speeds as well, or maybe not changing speeds as well as he could. Obviously the game isn't going to be thought of like that, because not every 85 mile an hour pitcher has command either. Not every 80 mile an hour pitcher has command. It all comes down to having that skill. So, if you can throw a certain speed and you can move the ball around the strike zone, and you understand how location affects reaction time and affects that, what you just said with reaction and speed and location adjusted timing, it's going to be effective. You can change speeds relatively well. You can change speeds just moving your fastball around. So I think that's something that, Perry Husband and I speak frequently, just trying to get that message out to pitchers is important, but the ability to execute that idea is very tough for many.
Yeah. But it does give some hope to pitchers that maybe don't have the velocity that, that other guys might have, and you call it intelligence versus power. Now, I can only assume that if you got intelligence and power, boy, you're really doing really good.
I mean, of course, that's the ultimate goal. when people approach me with what I'm doing, they're like, "Well, why not velocity?" And I'm like, "Of course, why not velocity? But why not velocity on how you compete in the baseball game, which is throwing balls inside the strike zone, and then if you're good enough, throwing balls to at a higher rate to certain areas of the strike zone." Yeah, so absolutely, we wouldn't have guys that are throwing 95, putting it where they want at a relatively high rate. Absolutely, 100%. But the truth of the matter is, most guys that are throwing with high rates of effort are lucky enough just to get it into the strike zone, and that'll play at a high level. And sometimes it won't. Depending on their other pitch qualities and other types of pitches they have. But guys with lower efforts, or maybe guys with lower speeds that can actually move the ball around, they can still be just as effective. So, yeah, I talk about it frequently. There is a sliding scale. But, ultimately, you want to feel like you're in control of where you're throwing the ball and how you're strategizing against hitters. And, that's something I'm trying to push forward in the game.
You know what, folks, we are with Dustin Pease, and he's also the founder of Location Nation. You can go locationnation.com, and location, it starts with L-O-K, and then nation, you'll have two N's there. But we'll have it on our show notes. Hey, Dustin, on your with your company there, I know you have a lot of, players at all different levels. When we're talking about command, because command really sounds like the thing that you're really focusing on, let's start with that. When it sounds like command, give us some ideas to our coaches out there. What are some of the things you work on to help players with their command? Some of the techniques, some of the things that you're working with your pitchers on?
I think one of the most important things that I work on is, well, one, the mindset, because if a pitcher comes into a training session and the mindset of their movement or the reason why they're throwing the ball is to throw it with max effort, and that's what they're focusing on every time, they're going to have a heightened problem with throwing the ball where it's supposed to go. So, again, I think that initial idea of adjusting their mindset that, you know, the reason why we're moving as pitchers is to throw the ball to a target is first and foremost. And that is going to help us set up kind of like the groundwork for working on our command after that idea. So as far as like mechanics go, you know, mechanically, that's a tricky question, you know, because you could have lots of different types of mechanics that can still execute throwing the ball to a desired location. So much of what I do is what I would call constraint-led type training, where we're kind of moving targeting around, whether it be at 60 feet, sometimes flat ground, but really moving the glove and targeting around so that the pitcher themselves can kind of solve problems on their own. There's no one exact release point or one exact area for every different pitcher. You know, we're all built differently. So, you know, trying to help guys and guide and find those release points by moving the catcher around, potentially making targets smaller, making areas bigger, giving different types of rules and where they can miss and how they can miss. This helps players find their release points better, and you can help them. You can help guide them and funnel them into the strike zone. You can help guide and funnel them to just hitting the glove. But this, all of this takes, you know, extensive amounts of time to be more proficient in the action.
So you're seeing that through constraint training, you're giving them actual targets or areas to hit, and that kind of changes or not changes, but it makes, you know, kind of organizes the body to do it correctly.
Yes. I mean, it's going to take a lot of focus. That is the ultimate, that's the idea. It can come down to the standards of the coach, you know, how many times you're able to do it. What is the degree of miss we're talking about? You know, so we can make it smaller, make it bigger. If the player wants to be superly challenge himself, you know, that's going to be up to his standards. But I think it's going to come down to how much feedback they're getting on their own without me interjecting and telling them they did it right or wrong. They can see right then without me having to say anything what they did wrong and for them to make adjustments. You know, there's no one exact adjustment if you miss. It's going to have to be like a trial and error, and they're going to have to feel how they're solving those problems. So I think that's where maybe some coaches struggle. They want to jump in right away when guys aren't throwing strikes with like trying to move a certain way or do this or do that. And it's not going to be that easy. You might see the next one go for a strike and then the next one's a ball. You know, you're just going to have to set up, I believe, environments or scenarios where the pitcher can learn how he's making adjustments to execute hitting the target.
Now, in your training, when does the velocity come into effect? Does the velocity, because of the training you're doing, increase slowly? Because I noticed on your website, your velocity throughout the years, how it increased naturally, you know, as you worked on, you know, on your movements and all that. And then is there other programs that you instill to help the velocity, or is it just the movement patterns?
Yes, it's good. I mean, for me, the first thing I'm going to say is, in terms of velocity, you know, you're going to build velocity as you grow. You know, so as you get bigger, you're going to throw harder typically. You know, a 25-year-old man is going to throw harder than a 15-year-old, you know, so there's a difference in how we're growing and how we're using our body. That being said, you know, with the research that I've done on back, just following through my process and just talking with other pitchers throughout my life and taking that into account, I feel like, you know, with the myelination process or the way that we kind of insulate circuits with our movement, you know, if you're doing the same movement over and over again, and this is kind of what I tie into how I tied it into my process. If you're repeating your motion over, or you're trying to repeat your motion as best you can over and over again, myelination is the process of insulating circuits and movement. So the more you do a movement, the more you do it over and over again, and what you feel is the same way, you're insulating movement circuits. So you're going to move, you can move quicker through those movements. You can move with more seamless through those movements and more explosive through those movements. So that's kind of like what I use through my book. When you're using the task of just throwing the ball to the target, you're constantly moving. You are concentrating on hitting the target. You're working on hitting the glove, but at the same time, you're still moving. So while you're doing that movement, the movement's going to continue to increase, to move harder, move faster. We can still regulate that to a certain degree, but that's kind of where I come in with it. As far as other means of improving explosiveness, and I was a big long toss guy, and I would long toss very, very frequently. I would get out as far as I could, and I would constantly try to increase that distance. So, I mean, just working on more explosive movements. But even during long toss, you know, every throw I made, you're trying to hit the glove. So that's why I like long toss so much. When you're long tossing, you can still focus on a target. You can still work on executing the task of hitting the glove while moving explosively, as compared to other training techniques where you're just moving explosively, throwing an object into an open blank area. You know, so tasking the reason for movement, you know, tasking the pitching motion to hit a target, I feel is very important in command training.
Yeah, I like the long toss with the target. You know, and again, you may not be able to answer this because I'm not even sure science has answered this. And again, you know, I could be wrong, but I've asked a lot of people, and I thought a lot of pretty good experts out there who have written articles on this. And I've done a lot of training in Japan. They do a lot of long tossing, but nobody could still explain to me why long tossing is good. I mean, they say, well, it increases your arm strength. Well, great, but, you know, sometimes I'd like to know, why does it increase your arm strength? Does it increase it for everybody? Have you seen that, that it does? I mean, everybody long tosses pretty much increases their velocity?
I'm not going to – I mean, I do a couple long toss programs out here in Maryland. We'll do it over the course of 6 weeks. I wouldn't consider it. We've had results where the speeds have gone up. We'll typically gauge where they started, where they are the first week, where they are in the sixth week. And we've had some good sessions where most everybody increases a mile or two in a crow hop setting. And then we've had ones where people stay the same or even go down. And that could be a result of a variety of things. But, you know, for me, when I think about it in terms of a velocity development with long toss, it's another way of constraining. So the more you back up, you're going to need to use more force to get it to the intended location. So, you know, for me, when it comes to arm strength, quote unquote, I've absolutely used arm strength myself, but for me, everything always comes down to quickness. Like, how explosively can we move? So I feel like as you're backing up, you're constantly trying to move your hand and arm faster. For me, I'm a big hand guy, trying to move your hand quicker. So more like moving a fly swatter through the air rather than like a boat oar, you know? So that speed and quickness is something that I would kind of focus on as I backed up. But the constraining idea of seeing that you can't get the ball to your partner, you know, and kind of seeing where you need to get to, forcing yourself to kind of get the ball further and further, you know, that for me was something that helped me see and feel and understand how much more force I needed, you know, where some people were, I wanted to get back out that farther, you know, I wanted to get out further and further and further. So that constraint greatly helped. And I feel like it helps a lot of others as well.
I like that. I bet that the way you put that, I really like that because it's not just about velocity or trying to gain arm strength. But as you're talking, I'm thinking also, if you're throwing longer to a target and harder, you know, faster, you're obviously increasing your arm speed and your body's adjusting to faster speeds. What's kind of nice about that is that then when you do come back to the regular distance and do the same thing, your accuracy would and command will probably improve.
In theory, you'd hope for that to be. That's one of the other main things I kind of have not an issue with long toss, because I've talked to Alan Jagger a few times about this. I mentioned it on social media a few times. I love long toss, but when it comes to truly commanding, like when it comes to truly pitching, you know, although we are tasking hitting the glove at 300 feet, that is not the same mode. That is not the same action of throwing at 60 feet, 6 inches. These are two entirely different actions, in my opinion. You know, so when you talk about a pitcher being an elite, skilled, commanding pitcher in a game at 60 feet, 6 inches, that's different than long tossing in practice, hitting a glove. You know, the environment's different. The variables are different. You know, there's a lot of different things that are affecting how we are interacting with the pitcher's mound that don't happen in long toss. So although there are some similarities, you know, true command, like truly getting better at the skill of command, is going to happen at 60 feet six. It's going to happen in practice, and it's going to happen in a variety of scenarios and environments.
What's your thought if I'm doing it? Let's take that same scenario, but now I'm doing it at 80 feet at velocity and control, or maybe 70, and then reducing it back to the 60 feet.
Yeah. I mean, again, through any stage of distance, if you can task the reason why you're moving through your motion to hit the glove, it's going to be good. But we're still interacting at different distances. So we're not interacting the same way we would on a slope, off a mound, with a batter in the box, with counts, with a hole in the mound, you know, whatever it is that we're dealing with. You know, the environment is just different. That's kind of what changes. But it's still better. And this is what I compare it to, what I see a lot. It's still better than a guy that's chucking a ball with a running start into an empty net. You know, while you might feel like you're moving more athletically and fast and explosive, which is fine. I guess you want to feel that when you're pitching. You aren't tasking your motion to execute a skill. And I feel like that's where I would be opposed to that. But long toss is going to prevent more similarities than others.
Now, where do we put all this together when it comes to understanding the reduction of injuries while we're training? So we're doing a movement patterns. We're, you know, throwing at certain velocities. What are we doing to, and I know there's no science or complete science to understand why, you know, pitchers are getting hurt. We know that they're throwing harder than ever, but what are we doing to possibly reduce the injury ability? What are you working on with your pitchers?
I mean, with my guys, we do pre-throwing, post-throwing workouts, stretching bands, things like that. Making sure our arm is plenty loose. You know, long toss is big for that because it's more of a progressive type of throwing program where you're starting off nice and easy. You're throwing with arcs on the way out. You're getting your arm nice and lubricated and loose to use it at a high rate. You know, all these things kind of help get your arm ready to throw at high rates of effort and speed, which produce more stress. You know, sometimes I shouldn't use my experience, but I do, just because I know my process was much different than everyone else. And I know it's interesting because like the Japanese and how they do it over there might be fairly similar to how I went through my process, but I don't talk about my process too much because it sounds very reckless. But, you know, I was throwing anywhere from 150 to like 250 pitches almost daily in my high school years. At lower percentages of effort, I wasn't operating at 100%, as in like throwing it as hard as I can every pitch. I was operating on completing a task, which was hitting a target. So, you know, 150 pitches, 60-70%, you know, I felt like I was building endurance on my motion. My arm felt great. Every day it was a little bit sore. I would throw, it would get loose. I would do it again. And, you know, I had a 16-year career without any arm injuries. So, yeah, I'm going to knock on wood with that, but at the same time, I felt like, you know, through all of that time practicing, you know, I was building resiliency in my throwing motion. I was building resiliency in my arm, some endurance in my arm. And, you know, I was able to pitch 9 innings in a game and stay at the same speed. And I wasn't able to throw 90, but I could consistently throw it out at a decent rate of speed and effort. But, you know, that is not what I do with my players. But at the same time, I'm very pro throw. So lots of throwing, lots of long toss. We'll regulate the days that they throw and things like that. But pre and post throwing routines with J bands, you know, all that stuff is good.
At weighted balls, they come into the picture at all? And what's your kind of philosophy about the weighted balls?
You know, weighted balls, there's stuff all over social media about weighted balls. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I was young, I used some weighted balls to kind of experiment with them to see how they work. There wasn't nearly as much research on weighted balls when I was coming up as a high school player. The way that social media and the world is nowadays, you know, we can kind of have a better understanding of how people are implementing and using weighted balls for their training methods. I believe there are some really good programs out there that probably do the best they can in terms of just monitoring how it's used, what it's used. But with that, I would say if people are interested in doing any type of serious weighted ball program, to probably go to those exact facilities themselves so they can have some better monitorization on your movements and your recovery and how it's affecting your body, because not every weight is going to be the same for every player. You know, that individualization for how these are implemented in some programs, especially if they're done remotely, it's just tough. So I'm a little bit indifferent to them in that terms. The only reason I have an issue with some weighted ball situations is how it could potentially affect pitching command, and then have the differentiation, the differential learning that they claim has a positive effect on executing a task. You know, when you're changing the weight of the ball, you're completely re-coordinating how your body is trying to use competitional weight. So that's typically not good. If you're only going to use one weight all the time in a game, in an environment that's going to require the most highest success rate, you're probably going to want to practice with that weight the most. In a way that I usually describe with scenarios and constraints that help you understand and find how you're using that competitional weight. So that's kind of my biggest problem with them, is how they affect command. But in terms of the other stuff, I mean, I'm not really a fan of them in terms of velocity development, but other people are, and it's going to work for them and they're going to like it. And I have no issues with that at all. I don't really talk much about that on social media.
Well, I do like that you talk a lot about command, because I think in some ways, you know, we're either getting away from it a little bit, or people are misinterpreting, you know, that, you know, the weighted ball program, that's only velocity. And then they forget, you know, to worry about the command aspect. Where do you see the game right now heading in, especially the pitching aspect? You see it heading in the wrong direction or a critical direction? Where do you see it right now?
I mean, the game is always going to be constantly changing, and it's really, it's cool. It's great to see so many more people able to throw so much harder. And this is just maybe empirically speaking, but it unfortunately also seems like more and more people are getting hurt, which I feel like, you know, a lot of the people out there trying to do research on this, I applaud them. You know, they are trying to figure out what's causing more stress. They're going to constantly try to figure out what's causing more injuries. Obviously the high velocity is going to do that, but I think they're trying to do more research on how people are moving, if they can reduce stress in other ways, so that we can operate at high rates of effort. You know, there's, again, that's the goal. I think the problem with what we're seeing is what we see on TV is are mainly finished products. You know, we see a bunch of guys that are able to actually execute at a decent rate, a high speed, and throw the ball to somewhat of a consistent location so they can compete in the game. What a lot of people don't see is the projects that exist in minor league baseball with the 95 to 102 mile an hour guys that you'll never hear of, that just will not be able to execute their motions to perform at the highest level, which is unfortunate because they obviously have the potential to be really, really good, but the culture never really allowed them to learn the skill. And unfortunately in the minor league systems, the culture of the game still isn't going to allow them to really learn the skill. One, because there's not much patience there. And two, because there's just not enough time. So the settings and the environments and the scenarios are all not really adept to learning the skill at a high rate. So, you know, I kind of like where stuff's going, but I kind of sense a change of direction at some point with people understanding that if they want to be a true factor in the game, or they want to help, or they want to be a part of a winning, or be a contributor to a game where they're trying to win, they're going to need to kind of refocus their attention a little bit. And it's going to take some of kind of like maybe what I'm doing, you know, just trying to shift the paradigm of how pitchers see success. Is it throwing 100 miles an hour so they can get a signing bonus, or is it throwing 95 miles an hour with some decent control, or 90 miles an hour, some elite commands, and just contributing to the game, you know? So I think that's what is going to be tough.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, it kind of sounds like, and we do get some callers in once in a while. If we got a question, we'll let you know. It kind of sounds like, you know, when you look at, you know, who won the World Series, you know, the Red Sox, and you see the hitting aspect, you know, there's a team that hit the ball all over the place, you know, different parts of the field. I think the game in itself, in the hitting aspect, is going to come around in that sense too, because, you know, we're so focused on launch angle and power and hitting it in one location. So I think, you know, that was well said by you. Now, I know, and again, I said it, I love the way you are focusing on the command aspect and you're staying with it. And part of that is you really believe, and it's very important that we take a look at, when we're looking at pitchers, the whip, you know, the addition of walks and hits, you know, per innings pitched. And I want you to address that, because I think it's important to talk about that when it comes to the command aspect for our coaches that are anywhere in the U.S. or around the world, because I think that's an important area to discuss.
Yeah. So for those that don't know that, what whip is basically the combination of walks and hits divided by innings pitch. So, you know, usually you want to have a whip in the low ones, And that means that you're probably only letting one base runner. Maybe if you have a whip in the low ones, you're maybe letting one guy on base an inning. You know, if you're at 1.5, there's a coin flip, you're letting two on in an inning. And obviously you can see how it goes. If you have a whip in a two, you're probably letting two guys on an inning. So the whole idea with whip is you just want to keep guys off the base paths. And while there are very, very bigger or more convoluted types of statistics out there, I feel like whip is pretty simplistic in nature. Is it an end game? No. There's lots of other ways to evaluate pitchers. But for me, it's just more about keeping guys off the bases. So, you know, I feel like if you can keep the walks down, keep the hits down, that's going to be good. I think where you see differences in whip is, you know, sometimes a guy will have really low walks and really high hits. And you can kind of determine more about a pitcher by their whip. Or I feel like sometimes you can determine a lot about a pitcher by their whip without even seeing them pitch. You know, if they have low walks and high hits, they're probably throwing a lot of pitches in the strike zone that are very hittable. You know, if they have a lot of high walks and a lot of low hits, they probably have really nasty stuff. They're just not able to throw it in the zone as much. So in a way, sometimes statistics can tell stories about pitchers, and sometimes you'll look at the stats and be like, it's just not quite adding up. But for me, it's just kind of something I like to put out there. You know, keep guys off the bases. And, you know, try not to – we don't want to walk them, and we don't want to give up hits. So we're trying to find the best way to do that.
Dustin, when a pitcher comes to you, whether it's a young player or whether it's a major leaguer or minor leaguer or whoever comes to you and you don't know them, how do you get to know the pitcher? How do you – you know, if you're going to work with them, do you go in and look at some research and as far as statistics? Do you go in to look at video before you even start doing anything with them? What do you recommend most coaches to do?
Well, for instance, like next week, I'm going to meet with a Division I pitcher. He's going to come down on his winter break. He wants to work on some command. I'll kind of go through like an assessment process. I feel like I really need to understand their mindset. You know, are they a guy that every time they move or trying to throw with max effort, what are they concentrating on? What has culture told them about the game? What are their values? You know, things like that. How has their mind been shaped for pitching success? You know, is pitching success a signing bonus? Is pitching success winning the game? Is it getting a lot of strikeouts? Like, what are they thinking about on a daily basis, on a yearly basis? You know, what are their goals? You know, these are all things that help me understand what happens in every single rep that they do and how they're focusing attention on certain tasks. And in terms of pitching command, it's going to require a ton of attention to execute a task at a high rate. And in terms of like getting into that really deep practice where you're really focusing on your movements. And if you're failing, if you're succeeding, if you can operate in smaller radiuses in terms of where the ball is going. But there's a lot of information I feel like that can help me guide constraints in practice. And a lot of it has to do with the mentality. And I know a lot of coaches will agree with that in general. You know, understanding how a player thinks can greatly help either a conversation or a discussion with, you know, how we kind of guide approaches and things like that. And it might be polarizing opposites with how we talk to one person compared to another. So for me, it's not even like addressing with pitching commands. It's not really truly addressing mechanics. You know, it's just seeing some video will help, seeing how they react to certain situations will help. But, you know, trying to pick apart their mindset a little bit is important to me.
You know, one of the hardest things that seems to be, you know, pitchers can work in the off season and then get ready, and you know, and sometimes they'll face some hitters. You know, whether you're in college, you might face some hitters indoors in the cages, unless you're in a warm climate area. A lot of young kids don't have that opportunity. What's some of the things that you might do with pitchers that prepares them? You know, they're doing pretty good when it comes to the practice part, but now they got to prepare for the game itself. You know, and those are two sometimes different aspects. Are there anything special you do to help them prepare for the game so that kind of the work that they did transfers into the real thing?
Awesome stuff. Awesome question. And again, just the more constraints, basically. So like the more advanced I feel they're improving or the more advanced their practice gets, as in like the easier tasks become in a more simple setting, the more we'll try to change the environment to be more like a game. So, You know, for instance, we'll kind of go like maybe just like we'll do some flat ground work, maybe. But then most of our work's going to be at 60 feet executing locations. If they can prove to themselves and to me that they can be more proficient in executing the tasks, then we'll make it more tricky. So we'll make the thing smaller. We'll add counts, and I'll kind of put them in a count scenario. I'll kind of put runners on base, give them a score, you know, kind of try to add some pressure in little ways like that. After that, we'll kind of do some things where maybe I'll stand in the batter's box and just kind of put or get a fake batter, one of those plastic things. You can kind of put them in there.
I was going to say, hope you have good insurance. Go ahead.
I'll stand in there. You know, I'm willing to put myself at risk to help see that transfer because, you know, that's right. That's why we're doing what we do. We don't want to have a guy crushing balls in the cage and can't hit the game. We don't want to have a guy pitching great in a controlled environment and it just never transfers. You know, and I think that's where people struggle. You know, you want to have very deliberate tasks in your practice. And if those are the actions you want to play out in the game, we have to find ways to transfer them in means of pressure and environments and how we're changing our practice and how we're developing those practice settings. And I'm going to be totally honest. I will put myself at risk in terms of getting hit or whatnot to give them that pressure to see if we can bring out more flaws in how they operate. So I'll stand in the box. Then what we can do is we could add an L screen and I could take some hacks off of them. You know, fortunately I'm a switch hitter. You know, I didn't get to hit in pro ball and I didn't hit in college, but I did hit in high school and I can still switch hit. So I can operate as a righty or a lefty and change things up a little bit. I can crowd the plate. I can get off the plate. You know, these are all things that can help transfer to the game. You know, so we can give them different types of baseballs. You know, not always going to have the same baseball. We can change it up a little bit where the seams might be higher or lower. You know, things like that. These are all things that change in the game, that chaos. And we want to try to give them the best type of practice setting that we can.
Dustin, once pitchers, you know, pitched in a ball game, I think this is important for coaches to understand. You know, the recovery process is obviously important to be able to come back and pitch again. What are some of the things that you guys teach to help players recover so that way they can come back and pitch, you know, and, you know, at full strength, let's say.
Right. So again, I'm going to be, unfortunately, I'm just way too biased in this answer because I wouldn't consider myself a freak of nature, but I trained a certain way so that I could recover better. But in terms of like recovery, obviously rest and days off are going to help. You know, I feel like it's kind of frowned upon these days, but you know, cardio always seemed like it worked for me. You know, getting after a day, I would pitch, but mainly if I started, if I relieved, I really didn't do much cardio. I would do some sprint work, explosiveness, things like that. Typically always doing my bands before and after, but, you know, the rest, if you're talking about a starter, you know, the at least 3 days off where you're kind of not pitching, at full effort is usually a good thing. Obviously major league pitchers get that fourth day. But for me, you know, I feel like it was important to be more resilient. You know, so that's why I pitched so much in my developmental years. You know, there was days when I pitched in Wichita before I signed with San Diego. On three different occasions, I pitched in five games back-to-back days. Five games back-to-back days. So let's just call it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I made an appearance in 5 days in a row.
Wow.
Sometimes it might've been only a batter. Other days it might've been three innings. You know, that was the year I broke an appearance record in Wichita. But yeah, you get sore, you're sore, but your arm will still operate the way, again, I don't think it's a product of just being a genetical thing. You know, I trained my arm to be more resilient that way. And the recovery process of just, you know, getting that extra work in each day, running or doing the sprint work or the bands, they're all ways that can help us recover. But, you know, in a logical thinking way, like if you want to throw more, if you want to train your body to be more resilient to throwing and being ready to throw and using it the way we want, it makes sense to me to do it more in a longer setting over the course of more consistent days. You know, I feel like when I coached a Division I staff for 2+ years, and it just seems like sometimes guys just didn't want to throw or they weren't sure about using their arm again. You know, if you want to use your arm, you're going to, if you want to use it consistently and you want to use it at a high rate, you're going to have to use it more. So again, I'm very pro throw in that sense, you know, use your arm more. Obviously we don't want to throw if we're injured or feeling tightness or soreness, but I mean, sometimes soreness, you can work through it. And sometimes I feel like that's something I'll work with my guys. Like, what really are you feeling? Are you injured or are you just sore? You know, cause we can work through some soreness sometimes, then we can get a good session in and we got somewhere that day, you know, we're building our arm through it. So, you know, we're kind of bringing it along. You know? So in a way, again, that might be a little counterculture on the way things are operating now, but sometimes I feel like guys don't recover well because they take too many days off or they're not using their arm enough. And then again, that's just the way I kind of treat it or think about it.
All right. If you want to follow Dustin Pease, you can check him out on locationnation.com. Check out our show notes and make sure check out his ebook, Nation's Guide to Commanding Locations. And you'll also get a chance to see a lot of testimonials from some major league pitchers and other players. So that I think that's one thing. But also, hey, Dustin, here's another one. I don't know if you put this on social media because I didn't check out all your social media on Twitter. You can check out Dustin at Location Nation on Twitter. Again, it'll be on our show notes. But I don't know if you put this up, but I know it's on your website. It said, pitch calling is stupid. Now, if you put that on Twitter, that'll really get a lot of people's attention. So let's talk about that. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so, you know, I played a long career in the game, and I was fortunate enough to go back to my alma mater and coach 2 years there at Mount St. Mary's as the pitching coach. And, you know, when I first started there, you know, I was with a professional mindset. You know, these guys know, these are Division I athletes. They're pitchers. They can, you know, I just came out of a professional setting. You know, these guys know what they're doing. They can call their own games. You know, so I gave them the freedom to call their own games with the catcher and you know, things they just weren't good. You know, the way that they would sequence things were just poor in general. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll just, I'll take over and then we'll kind of discuss things as time goes on. And then, you know, so that was within the first year that happened. So I let them have the freedom early in the season. Then I realized that wasn't a good idea. We needed to have better sequences. I took over. And then, you know, during that process as through the whole rest of the year, you'll come to realize, and a lot of coaches will realize this, whether they want to admit it or not, but the majority of the time when you call a pitch, well, maybe not the majority of the time, it depends on who's pitching. You call a pitch, it's not executed. You're basically just wasting your mental energy calling a pitch when the pitch isn't where it's supposed to be. So then you're basically trying to pattern pitches around misses, which misses are going to happen. They will happen. But for a pitcher that can execute at even just a decent rate, you know, it's worth the mental energy to call a pitch, call a different pitch, an off-speed pitch, a different location. You know, so if you're constantly calling pitches and the dude's spiking the ball or he's chucking high fastballs and he can't execute locations well, it's not worth calling the pitches. At that point, just try to throw the ball in the strike zone and hopefully you get out of the inning. You know, so as I kind of elaborated on in that blog. But yeah, that's definitely going to get people's attention. But when you think about it, it makes sense. And if you've done it with people, whether it's little league or all the way to college or pro, if a pitcher can't execute what you're calling, it honestly doesn't really matter what you're calling.
Yeah, and no, you know, and the other thing is, I was going to ask also, what about, you know, are you pitching to the pitcher's strengths or the hitter's weaknesses? And what are you telling your pitchers when it comes to that?
That's a good follow-up. I mean, so like, you know, scouting reports are what they are, but it's, if you know your staff's abilities, and this is, you know, one of the reasons I started Location Nation was because of the experience I had as a Division I coach. You know, when you sit down with your staff with a scouting report, if your pitchers are just that good, it doesn't really matter what the scouting report says about the hitters. You're just going to dominate them with what you have. It does help to know where the hitter's weaknesses are. And you can pitch to those weaknesses as a pitcher, especially if you already have great stuff. The issue is when you're going over any scouting report, whether it's a major league hitter, a minor league hitter, independent ball, college, you know, if they have weaknesses and a pitcher doesn't have the slightest ability to command, or half of your staff can command and the other half can't, you can't execute against the weakness. So whether the pitcher who's really, maybe a pitcher has really awesome stuff, like throws in the low to mid-90s, wipe out off-speed stuff. If he can't execute it at all in the strike zone, he's not going to be effective. So why are we even talking about how to execute it against the hitter? You know, so it's kind of like, it's not that you want to write them off. We need to get you to be able to execute pitches. We need to have you command pitches at a better rate so that we can effectively use what you have. So it's not that, you know, we're trying to pick one or the other. It's like you need to be able to execute what you have. And again, that's why I feel like I struggled so much trying to get that message across, because the culture of the game doesn't allow guys to think with a clear mind. You know, like, man, how can I be successful against this hitter? Well, I need to get drafted, so I got to throw 96. But I can only throw 93 now. And that's the stuff they're thinking about. They're not thinking about executing a pitch against a hitter, if they can do it consistently, or if they can throw a strike, or if they're executing a target. These are the things that affect mindset. So it's really tough to deal with. And I got through to some pitchers when I was working there, and it was great. They really turned around. One of the pitchers I worked with there is still playing pro ball now. He's in the Mexican League. He just led the – he was second in the Atlantic League in ERA, Vince Molesky. You know, his mindset was great. You know, he adopted a lot of it, and he really worked at it, and it was good to see. But the ones that don't, it was so detrimental to see them not be able to further their career, because they certainly had talent. They just couldn't execute what they had. So I know that's a little bit long-winded, but in a way, you know, that's kind of – it's one of the ways that led me to Location Nation. I want to reach more pitchers. You know, I want to reach more guys that maybe have what they have, or maybe don't have what they have, and can still be really successful in games. If you don't have the best stuff, you can still be a really quality pitcher if you can command and execute stuff.
You know, Dustin, that was one of the main reasons I wanted to bring you on the show. And after I read some of the things on your website, because, you know, for the last 20, 25 years, I've been going, like I mentioned on the show earlier, and our audience knows this, been going to Japan a lot. I'm a big believer in how the Japanese train. I get it that sometimes they break down because they pitch a lot. But, you know, the thing they focus on the most, and I think is a great example, if people would just take a look at this, they have the best consistency of anybody in the game. They start them at 8, 9, 10 years old. Command is the number one issue. Movement patterns is important to them, obviously. And they do it over and over and over again. And I don't care what level you're at in Japan, they still throw hard, every one of them. They've got a ton of them, and their control dominates. And that's why I really wanted to bring you on the show, because I think it's refreshing to hear, and other, you know, others need to hear that. Our audience has heard it from me. Also, they've also heard that, you know, I'm a big believer, and this is why I asked you the question about the pitch count, or the, not pitch counts, the pitch command, is because I believe we need to start training our younger kids to understand how to pitch so they can call the game instead of us always controlling everything they do.
Right. I agree. I mean, again, starting it at a young age is good. If we can just help them, some people ask me, what's the best tip for command? Just constantly reaffirming to pitchers that pitching is all about location. Pitching is all about location. You know, throwing is throwing the ball. You know, throwing the ball is a byproduct of pitching. If we think about why we're moving, we're thinking about pitching, which is executing the ball to hit a target. You know, and as time goes on, and we're going to get bigger, we're going to get stronger, and we're going to throw hard as a byproduct, and we're going to continue focusing on hitting the glove with hopefully more consistent movement patterns than others, maybe more efficient and optimal movement patterns than others if we're fortunate enough to work with guys or people that can put us in better patterns, or ones that maybe just work for us or guide us to ones that work for us. So, you know, I just think it's important to have that mindset. And you're right, at a young age, it really helps. And if you can just keep reaffirming it, it's going to help. And I do that with a lot of my guys. And every single week or every day or whenever I see them, I'll always ask them, what is pitching all about? What is pitching all about? What is pitching all about? And they'll say location. You know, and that's the stuff when you're on the mound in the game, like, you want to make sure you are executing. You're doing the best of your ability to execute the target. So it's just that constant reaffirmation to help guys continue to work towards their best goal.
All right. We are coming to the end of the show, but I want to address something else. And then at the end, Dustin, you're going to, you know, I like to always open it up because, you know, there's so many things to talk about. I'm sure I missed things that you wanted to mention. So that'll be a good time at the end for you to talk about anything you really wanted to mention, you know, to our coaches and players and parents around the world. But one area I wanted to ask you about was, you know, we've got location. What about the difference in velocity of the different pitches? Is that important We understand that different locations gives you different velocity, but what about if you're throwing a fastball and a changeup and a curveball at a certain age, say, in high school or college? And, is it important that velocity between different pitches? Is there a certain velocity that they need to be? Or is it just 2-3 miles an hour? What's the concept there that they need to work on?
That's good. I mean, so for me, I would always be of mindset, I want to be somewhere between 5, 4 to 6 on a changeup, and that's like an outset, an average changeup. We're talking objective measurement. So like if you're an 80 mile an hour pitcher, a changeup could be anywhere from 75, 74. That's pretty good. Really good ones, I would say. And if mine was like 8 to 10 miles an hour slower. The curveballs are typically anywhere from like 12 to 15 miles an hour slower. Sliders a little harder, so a little bit harder than that range, but the objective measurement is fairly important, because it's going to help drive the effective measurement. So, and this is what I was just having a discussion with somebody on Twitter about this the other day. If you throw 90 miles an hour low and away, you're effectively throwing 84 to 85 miles an hour. And then if you throw an 84 mile an hour changeup right down the middle, you effectively didn't change the time of the pitch at all. So the location, and this is what goes back to this executing pitches. If you execute pitches and you understand how location affects timing, all of this drives how we use our pitches. So it's good if our pitches are different speeds, but we want to make sure that we're using them, tunneling them, / putting them in locations that are going to create the biggest spread of effective speed difference and how a batter needs to adjust for the timing where the pitch is located. So, but in terms of objective measurements, you're looking anywhere from 4 to 10 miles an hour on a changeup, which is, that's anywhere from average to really good, even maybe more so than that. And then a curveball, 12 to 15 or more so than that. But you're going to have varying speeds depending on how you throw it. And there's lots of different ways that people are going to throw it with the way they move. So that's kind of where I am on that.
All right, super. And now the finale. Folks know out there, anything you wanted to talk about that was important that you want to mention, here's your time, man.
Yeah, so I mean, I've obviously talked about movements a lot and just things in general and in regards to the pitching motion. I think, a lot of people kind of come across think I have an issue with velocity or velocity being a problem. I mean, as time goes on, I'm hoping more and more people realize that's not the case. We obviously want to be able to pitch at the highest speed that we can. A lot of what I do is comes down to skill acquisition. So how are we acquiring the skill of pitching? How are we acquiring the skill of being able to hit a target at a high rate? And a lot of this comes down to how our brain works, and reason for movement. So unfortunately, let's say that kid isn't kind of like understanding like the reason for his movement or passing his movement is a target. It's just a throw and throw hard, and that's all that we do. All we ever do is work to move harder and move faster and try to throw the ball more aggressively. We're going to struggle typically with command because we're not mapping our motion. We're not mapping that mindset to throw the ball to certain areas of the zone. And it's going to be very hard to do that at a high rate of effort if you haven't already tasked your motion for accuracy. So let's say you reach 90 miles an hour in your quest for velocity and you don't have any command. Unfortunately, it's going to be extremely difficult to be elitely command oriented. So you're going to have to back your speed off to a rate that allows you to understand the task, how you're moving to hit a target, things like that. So I do a lot of research on how our brain understands movements and tasks, effort level. But I think the main thing I want people to understand is that your effort level plays a great deal in how we understand how we're moving and how we're understanding how we're executing the goal. Mm-hmm. So we just want to continue to be aware of that and work towards having a skill at a high rate of effort. And that's kind of something I kind of said throughout the session, but I kind of want to make sure I worded it a little bit better by the end. Hopefully that resonates with everyone. And anybody has any questions about pitching command, we will problem solve together. I'm still learning myself. I love to express my bias on it based on my experience, but I love to I continue to do research on the brain, our movements, how we're moving, how we achieve goals. And I look forward to problem solving with more people throughout the future.
All right, Dustin Pease with Location Nation. And I love it because, we got a challenge. you know, issues all the time. If we don't challenge things, as you say in the show, whether it's the status quo or anything else, we don't challenge it, we're not going to get any better. So I'm glad we had a topic on the command issue. But I, you know, as you said, you have nothing against the velocity. Velocity is important. If you can get it, great. But don't forget the command aspect of it. So Justin, that was fantastic. And really appreciate you being on the show. We'll have all the show notes on there. So thanks for being on Baseball Outside the Box.
Peter, thanks for having me. Hopefully we can do it again at some point.
All right, again, Dustin Pease with Location Nation. We'll have his Twitter on there, at Location Nation. Check him out. Also, check out his website at locationnation.com. Again, it'll be on the show notes. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show. If you have any questions, email me at petercaliendo@AT&T.net. I want to thank our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. As always, does a fantastic job with producing the show. Again, thank you to Dustin Pease of Location Nation. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.